It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, I am worried about this country.
About what?
This country.
This country, oh.
Worried about this country. Have you seen the Kool-Aid ads?
Kool-Aid ads?
Mm-hmm. See, we didn't see them for a while because all we had were political ads. But now they're making their way back in.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen any ads.
Kool-Aid has had a marketing campaign for a while now. It's all animated, which I suppose is really helpful during COVID. And it's kids. And then they're all the same. The premise is there's a child somewhere drinking soda or pop, depending on where you live. Somewhere else, the Kool-Aid man is doing something innocuous, like shaving, but it's with a squeegee. So, like, you know, cute. He will sense that the pop is about to run out, and then he will show up and bust through the wall and bring Kool-Aid. The slogan is literally Kool-Aid for when the soda runs out. Kool-Aid, I mean, historically, for many, many years, their big selling point was less sugar than soda. Now their argument appears to be, we're more shelf stable, so when you're in a doomsday prep situation where you're out of soda, please consider us your second choice as opposed to water.
I'm really confused by this, honestly.
Yep.
I mean, what?
Like, I kept being like, it seems like they're saying, and then at the end they're like, Kool-Aid for when the soda's all gone. I'm like, nope, doesn't seem like they're saying it. They are just saying it.
What was the conversation like in the ad room?
Look, okay, Phil, I mean, I know you're new here, but the whole we're finally going to beat soda culture died out in the late 90s, man. That was the closest we were going to get. So you need to tone that kind of language down. We're still good with 30% less sugar, but we got to be realistic here. They're only coming to us after soda's gone. Yeah.
So they think the consumers, when they go to the store and buy sodas that their kids are going to drink, that they're going to
follow behind, that they're going to think, you keep going down this path,
that the person who's buying the soda is going to think, oh, and I better get some packets of Kool-Aid in case this runs out.
Because I'm clearly not buying enough soda.
Or, hey, if I buy enough packets of Kool-Aid, I don't have to say no whenever the kid asks for a soda, because even if it runs out, there'll be something else to drink.
Exactly. As long as they're getting that fix. Also, and maybe I knew you would be with me on this, and I feel like we're not alone on that. This one could just be me, but it also feels disconcertingly too few steps away to someone just making Kool-Aid, like using Coca-Cola instead of water. I don't like conflating the two. I much preferred it when it was pop versus Kool-Aid. I don't like it's now they've joined forces. I just had to work out marching order, but otherwise they're fine.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't like them on the same team.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the thinking.
We're all in agreement. We want those kids diabetic now.
But it's like, it seems like the people in the ad rooms that work for beer commercials are going to be so tempted, you know, say, Bud Light when the soda runs out. Speak into your dad's beer. I don't know. That just doesn't.
It's 4:30, and you've officially finished homeschooling your kids for another day. Maybe you can get in a quick round of Call of Duty before it's your turn to make the supper. And your kids drank all the Mountain Dew. Well, you know, 5 o'clock somewhere. Bud Light for when the soda runs out.
When the soda runs out. I mean, as you're pointing out, they're kind of giving up, right? It's like, look, we know you're not going to buy Kool-Aid for your kids. We know. Buy sodas. We know that. But just think a little bit about this. What if it runs out? I mean, it could run out. Has it ever run out? Sure it has. So maybe buy it for that reason. I mean,
does this feel like was it Avis Car Rental? They used to have their slogan about we're number two, so we try harder. Is this like the sweetened soft drink version of that?
And how you much cool
soda much, only comes in those bottles and cans. You can't make and your
how
own.
How much Kool-Aid do they think people will buy, right? Because you're not going to buy very much if it's just there for when the soda runs out and you're going to go back to the store every other week
you'd
to buy
think.
Soda. So it's just this reserve thing that you have six packets of and you won't probably ever buy again. So it's how is this going to motivate people to buy a lot of it? Much less any of it. Because it seems like, to me, the commercial is saying, make sure you buy enough soda. That's what the commercials really say.
Right.
Is
there a conspiracy theory we don't know about like achieving peak soda? Like maybe they're talking climatically here. Like we know the soda's gonna run out. Like the way we're abusing our environment, there's not going to be soda soon, so you still have Kool-Aid.
Who owns Kool-Aid? The company that owns Kool-Aid? Because then because if a soda company owns Kool-Aid, then they're not going to care, right? If the commercial encourages people to buy more soda and more Kool-Aid, I guess then they win both ways.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying they have, unbeknownst to us, Kool-Aid had just stopped advertising. Now Kool-Aid has found secret truth that within 10 years we'll be out of soda. And so they're just putting out there. It's like, you know, for when the soda runs out, because it's gonna 95% of all creditable scientists have achieved consensus on this. We're going to run out of soda.
I think Coca-Cola maybe owns Kool-Aid now, and they're just, you know. They're just playing both sides.
Don't tell them not to drink it. Be like, you know, when it runs out, switch. Like, you had enough soda. I think you better switch to Kool-Aid. I mean, pace yourself. It's a long, long day ahead of us here. Christ, man, it's only 11:30. You got most of your school day left.
Maybe what they need to do is not sell Kool-Aid in those packets, where to make the proper amount of Kool-Aid, it's like a whole big pitcher's worth. They just should sell it in small amounts so you can put it in a bottled water with a little sugar and shake it up. Maybe they should just make it in those portions.
Things, right?
Yeah, but I don't think Kool-Aid sells them in those portions.
No, they 100% do.
Oh, do they?
Which is a problem if you're my wife.
What's that?
And actually, it's a problem if you're me, too. Sometime, somebody gave us some Kool-Aid singles.
Oh, Kool-Aid singles, oh.
Well, no, Kool-Aid singles are those bottle things.
Oh, they're already made. You don't.
Yeah, yeah. No, somebody gave us packet ones that were kind of like the Crystal Light ones and things like that, but it was for Kool-Aid. But here's the problem. It wasn't sugar-free Kool-Aid, so I wasn't going to drink it because it had a bunch of sugar in it.
Yeah.
But to have a reasonable packet for Kool-Aid in that kind of container would be really big because there's a lot of sugar in Kool-Aid. It's less than soda. There's a lot of sugar in both of them. And so to make it packet-sized, they, for lack of a better term, cut the sugar with sucralose.
Mm.
So it was part artificial sweetener, which meant Trish wouldn't drink it because she could taste it and didn't like it. So it was not nearly as helpful. It's a lot easier to do a little packet thing when you're like zero calorie and shit like that.
Well, when I was a kid, I used to take Kool-Aid packets and a cup of sugar and put them in a plastic bag, shake it up. And then you could like, you know, take anything, a spoon or a toothpick or if you had any popsicle sticks at home, you could, you know, you just lick them, stick it in there, and it'd be like, you know, that candy where you have a little candy stick and you lick it and you dip it into the powder.
Yeah, but with a cup of sugar.
Yeah, you'd need about a cup of sugar. Well, you basically put the same thing in the bag that you would put in the water. Blend it up.
Yeah.
And then you would use like I said, anything really. If you moistened it with saliva and stuck it in there, the sugar would stick to it and you'd lick it off just like.
Yeah, like a Lick-A-Mate or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not saying I wouldn't have loved this as a child. I'm saying, how is it I'm the one with diabetes? Like, that's, you sound like the lost Little Rascals kid. Like, just past the kid who's constantly making grape jelly and bread sandwiches is you, just with a bag of sugar slung over your shoulder, just dunking sticks in it and licking it.
We ate so much sugar, man.
Gave up popsicle sticks a long time back. You just have a tree limb.
I mean, I know I've talked about how my parents wouldn't get sugared cereal, but that didn't prevent it from putting sugar on.
Your audio has cut out over
too
here.
Too much.
So it just looks like you're trying to really make a poignant look up with your face. But not actually finish your own sentence.
Oh, well, it's not important.
Get a lot of sugar. That was how they got me to exercise. If I was willing to go on a walk to the 7-Eleven, I could buy something from the 7-Eleven. Which, on a certain level, I understand what they were going for. But
well, how far away was the 7-Eleven?
More than a mile each way. Oh. That seemed like a lot when I was little. Kind of a fun walk. You go like through the neighborhoods, not along the highway. I'm worried about your internet.
A little bit of what you said there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am too. This is causing problems, I can tell.
Intervention for your internet?
I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with it. I'm pretty far away from the router. Maybe that's a big problem. I don't know.
In general, you guys don't have internet troubles at your house?
No, but I don't usually do anything in this room on the internet except this.
Oh. It could be a cursed room.
Well, I thought we already talked about this, that people were buried here. Remember you said?
It sounds familiar. Did they move the headstones? As long as they did that, it's fine.
That's what you said.
I've never done this show before. I don't know what you're talking about. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world. It's still done more than 500, right? I know last week we had done more than 500. We're the only ones who've still done that. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 503.
See, I was right. More than 500.
Yep.
All right, I do remember how this show works. I should go through that. If you're joining us for the first time, bad luck. We have a hat over there. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, good people, kind, wonderful people, people who make podcasts worth podcasting, write that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. It's these guys, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour, and that's the whole show. Except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. So, I have done nothing for 2 weeks. Almost 2 weeks. I have been very active in my doing of nothing. I have worked really hard to not do stuff. So I barely know what day it is. And I have no idea what's happened in the world in the last week or two. So, how's it been?
No idea at all?
I mean, I know like the election happened. I assume it's not done. I assume it still mostly looks like Biden will probably win. But we won't actually really know for days, and that'll be before the lawsuits kick in.
Well, that you know quite a bit for a person that doesn't know anything.
That's from guessing. That is 100% guess. That's just how I assumed it would be.
Well, you are missing some interesting nuance that you probably don't even want to know.
Hey, because my mom couldn't resist emailing, I gathered from context, apparently we went pretty red here in Iowa.
Oh, yes. The state house on both the Senate and the House side has more Republicans now. The Electoral College went to Trump, and also we're probably going to have more Joni Ernst won, so that's two Republican senators like we had before, and we're going to have more Republican representatives, it looks like. Our district, the second district, the race is too close. There's probably going to be a recount, but there is a chance that we will have a Republican as our U.S. representative. We had a Democrat for years, Loeb Sack.
For many, 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 many years.
Who retired, and it may be that his replacement.
Okay.
And maybe his replacement is going to be a Republican. Maybe, but perhaps not. We'll see how the recount goes. The vote is so close. Usually recounts don't really amount to anything. I mean, you know, but that's because a lot of recounts are triggered when there's, you know, sometimes thousands of votes different. This is within hundreds of votes. So the recount could actually mean something. So we'll see.
All right, but none of anything ever is resolved there. So just how's you been? What have you been doing?
I mean, lots of things. You know, Dave Avid was here today at my house.
This does not seem like good protocols.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't, like, in the house. He dropped something off. He dropped something off for me. It was a glass. It's a sort of a mug, but it's made of glass, and it's a frosty root beer with, like, the character, the Frosty from, you know, the little elf guy that's on the Frosty root beer bottles. You know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
He had one of these, and he...
In my day, it was a bear.
Frosty?
No. A&W, though. They were obsessed with bears.
That's right. But when I was a kid, my two favorite root beers was A&W, which was my absolute favorite, and Frosty. Those are my favorite root beers. And I haven't had Frosty for a very long time. I only learned today that you can go to the local Hy-Vee and get some.
I was going to say, I think I saw it the other day at Hy-Vee.
Yeah.
I think that's regional, though. I'd never heard of Frosty root beer before.
Made with sugar.
I mean, I have many, many, many times, but not as a brand name. Frosty root beer.
Well, I used to love it when I was a kid. And so when he told me that he had this commemorative mug glass thing, then he would be willing to give it to me, I was like, yeah, great, I'll take it. But he didn't just drop by a mug. He dropped by a can of 1919 root beer, which I guess you can get at Fairway now.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm like, that's cool.
Dave Avid really coming through on the root beer connection there.
Very, very nice. You know, but I, what I didn't know. Some root
beer shit to figure out. I said, let me look into it. I know a guy.
Until fairly recently, I knew before today, but fairly recently, I found out that Frosty actually made lots of flavors of soda, and I didn't know that.
Yes, I thought that was the case because I remembered there being a lot of things called Frosty at Hy-Vee the other day. For some reason, probably somebody was going down the aisle and I didn't want to do too close, but I stopped by the niche soda shelf, and there's a bunch of Frosty stuff. Yeah,
I would like to try the other things, and so maybe I will. But
as soon as they let you back into Hy-Vee,
Frost. Well, I mean, we order, we pick it up. We order and pick it up.
I'm very close to that. Basically, as soon as it gets too cold for me to go right after the gym, which is what I'm doing right now, I think I'll have to switch to that.
And I'll probably have to get, at least I'll have to get some root beer so I can have it in my mug. But before that, I'm going to have 1919 in it. Probably not tonight. I'll probably have it tomorrow. I'll probably have it sometime tomorrow. But I was very grateful to David for dropping it off. And I felt a little bad because he told me when he was going to come over and I was going to be ready. And I wasn't. I got distracted with some other thing. So I didn't even like have a mask going at the door. But he did have one on and we kind of kept our distance from one another. But I was very happy that he brought it by. It was very nice of him. I didn't even think they sold 19 checked. You could only get it in kegs, and it's like only restaurants could, you know, you
I've other only people ever could had get it, it,
but mostly restaurants.
But yeah, I've only ever had it as fountain.
Yeah, mostly only restaurants would have it. I mean, anyone could buy it in a keg, but you know, then you'd have to tap it and stuff. So only restaurants usually had it, but now you can get it in candy at Fairway. So. And it's made with sugar, not corn syrup. So it's probably still like as good as you get from the fountain.
So it's what you should drink before you turn to the Kool-Aid.
That's such a dumb ad campaign.
It should be the next side is whatever soda company owns Kool-Aid, whatever their soda, they'll be like, here, for before you open the Kool-Aid. When the soda's gone, that's the word. Like,
And other than that, we haven't been doing a whole lot of things because political stuff going on since Tuesday. We've been kind of paying attention to that. But you know, not a lot of other things. You say you've been doing nothing, but I know you've been like watching movies and playing games and stuff. So
yeah, but I also don't remember them all very well. I've been sleeping well more than 12 hours a day on average. Apparently that's really how I needed to cathart the process for being stuck inside for months and months. Apparently all that stress was just like, you're just going to sleep a whole bunch for 2 weeks.
I mean, I think that is a thing.
Yeah. It can also be a thing the other way, though. That's one of those things, like, it can be a sign of emotional processing and lost anxiety. It can also be a sign of depression. And you're trying to disassociate from yourself. So,
yeah.
As with everything, a little bit good, a little too much bad. And yeah, I didn't watch any movies that are particularly of note.
Aren't you playing a game or anything right now, or?
Yeah, but we took this week off because the election. We're just now setting up a game that's basically freelance police in space.
Yeah, I think I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, Ash and Stars. I've been looking at it a little bit more differently going through it this time. It really is. It's kind of post-apocalyptic Star Trek. It's basically we achieved the ideal version that is Star Trek and the Galactic Federation, and then something terrible happened. It was a war. There are bits of it that our brains don't remember quite correctly, and now we're trying to put the pieces back together of this Federation. It's, you know, falling apart because of this war. So it's a very interesting playing off, you know, the established ideals of the society versus the dystopian reality you're now in. And that's kind of a theme for the game is, I mean, the erosion of ideals and the potential corruption therein. So yeah, hopefully it'll be fun. One of them's playing a giant locust, so that'll be cool.
How do people remember what the previous society was like when they don't remember any of the details of how it fell?
They do sort of. What happens is this random monster, alien species, attacks, and they're really bad, and they have technology like nobody's seen, and irradiate entire planets very quickly. And then war went on for years. Then something happened and suddenly the entire species of bad guy were just gone, and literally no sentient being can quite clearly remember A, what happened, or B, what the bad guys actually were. They call it the bogey conundrum, and it's just a thing just everybody has. So you can kind of know, like, yeah, I fought in the war and I was around here, but you can't remember any details because you can't remember who the bad guys were.
I know we can remember
what the end is.
I know we talked about this before, but I don't think I ever quite understood why is the game made like that? I mean, what is it? What's that mechanic trying to achieve that people don't know?
I think the establishment of the idea was, like I talked about, taking this Star Trek idea and being like, okay, but what happens if that falls down? How do you deal with that? I think making the end of the war and the current situation unknown is just a way to be like, here's a fun thing you can play with if you want. Here's an obvious mystery that your GM can make it whatever it wants. But you also can just ignore it if you want. And then I think it lets you shortcut a lot of things. You don't have to deal with certain elements of fallout from the war because, like, nobody remembers them. But mostly it's Robin D. Laws, who has been making games for decades now, And it's probably just something he was drinking one night and got that idea in his head. He's very big on, like, this is the framework. I'm not going to write more books and tell you, like, what happened in the setting. This is the framework of a setting. As soon as you start playing it, you're building it into your own thing.
Okay, but you could achieve that by just saying, make the bad guys whatever and whoever you want. Why go the extra step to say nobody remembers? Because now you have to
sounded work that cool.
Oh, okay.
I presume.
Okay. I just don't understand, I guess.
He just liked to put a bunch of weird crap in there, but I don't understand either. If I did understand, I could probably make a lot of money writing up these books and these games like he does.
Well, apparently you can just make stuff up that doesn't make any immediate sense, and that's okay because people will buy it, I guess.
Dude wrote a book called Hamlet's Hit Points. Did very well.
Okay.
Robin D. Laws is one of the granddaddies of the role-playing game world.
I do not question it.
He's one of those guys who could be chosen to host something and then spend the whole time pissing off all the non-white male audience.
You may have come
up a few months ago in a online thing where apparently George R. R. Martin and Robert Silverberg just kind of waxed philosophical about the good old days while they were emceeing a conference, and it angered a lot of people.
Oh.
And I'm just saying, he's old enough, he could totally do that too.
Okay.
I guess it's the role-playing community versus the novel community, but still. I told you nothing happened to me. I don't know why you're having me talk this much.
I just asked. I mean, I didn't know you were signaling to me to not ask.
I'm saying I don't have anything. You don't either now. You're stuck.
Okay.
Recording from my side. So I just know whatever I see. All right, you're back now. I'll draw a thing.
Okay, draw a thing.
Almost opened the house today. It's so warm now. Oh. It's from coffee. I'm not sure we're going to be that helpful in this.
Oh.
Please explain why Billy Joel songs are featured in The Boys.
Are they?
Well, see, this is the fundamental problem that should say that we are not able to answer this. Is I'm guessing neither of us has seen The Boys, like, at all.
I haven't seen it.
You are aware of what it is.
Yeah, in fact, I have pretty much no interest in seeing it.
That's my thing. I actually recently found out that the plot details are slightly different from what I thought they were, a little bit, but it's still exactly a sort of show that I'm like, no, I don't need to watch Toxic Masculinity, the series, which is too bad because the acting chops they've got in it and the production values look like, I'm sure it would be great if it was something I actually wanted to see. But I didn't. So we're going to have a problem here. Let's take it on faith. Coffee is neither lying nor confused about who Billy Joel is. I know her well enough. I'm willing to trust on these two fronts.
So have I said before on the podcast or to you in any context that what a huge Billy Joel fan I am?
I mean, yes. I feel like I knew that before I knew you. Like 5 years before I came to Applied, I was like, I'm going to know a man and he's going to be a really huge Billy Joel fan. And like, that's how well I have known that. In fact, you know, I'll tell you, the moment I became truly aware of your level of Billy Joel fanness, when I was reading your first novel, and there's a espionage thriller like clue that occurs because the person looking happens to know that the person they're looking for is a big Billy Joel fan.
And that is correct.
Things come together in very Da Vinci Code-esque ways.
Also,
and I was like, holy crap.
Back when the Cabbage Patch doll craze was going on, my mom bought me one. And you could name them, like send in a registration form and everything. And I named my Cabbage Patch doll William Joel. I did. He's still around here somewhere. I don't know where he went. I think I still have it.
So your and mom your provides are covered.
And mom made a little sweatpants and a sweatshirt for him with Joel on the back, because that's what I called him, because, you know, my name's William, and so, you know,
you're already feeling a Billy. Yeah.
We called him Joel. But yeah, I mean, I've not been to that many concerts in my life. Probably 8, but half of them were Billy Joel concerts. So yeah, I'm a pretty big Billy Joel
fan. In answer to your question, Coffee, William is definitely the biggest of the two of us of Billy Joel fan. But wait, that wasn't the question, though.
Well, if I was watching the show and probably not enjoying it, I probably would have little moments of joy every time a Billy Joel song came on. I suspect the reason, if there are multiple, if Billy Joel songs are in the show, I suspect the reason is because someone who's a showrunner likes Billy Joel or hates Billy Joel. One of those.
I mean, that's one of those where I'm like, I'm not, I don't think you're necessarily wrong, but I don't think that's in the spirit of lively discussion. I'm like, well, that's true. That's true about everything. And that's just sad.
Well, if you had to guess.
The truth is, so much of art is just random bullshit.
Yeah. If you had to guess, because they hate Billy Joel or love him, which would you guess?
I have my own theory. It has to be love.
Okay.
But, Coffee, you really are going to have to come and talk us through this on the blog. Because, I mean, there's a lot. All we know is, presumably based on this, there's some Billy Joel play on there. I think there's probably some real analysis into what's played and when's played and all this. So here's what I'm going to throw out there. I think I know why it's being played, but my theory includes a lot of assumptions. The biggest assumption being, only tracks from Glass Houses. I'm willing to give you a little other stuff up to Stranger, really, but I really do think it's all Glass Houses. And Glass Houses is distinct in certain ways. It is, from a cultural memory perspective, it's still the most famous one. That's the thing. It had a whole bunch of hits for it. If I had to grab 4 Billy Joel songs from one album, walk into a room and you know, bet my life on whether they'd recognize them, some, I'd be grabbing from Glass Houses every time. And the other thing is, Glass Houses is all about this rebel without a cause vibe. And it's all about being a bad boy and being a street kid. And, you know, that was his shtick. That was what he was coming out of. But it stopped after that, because after that he was like, yeah, I was an angry young man, but I'm a musician. So got way more into that, but that first one was very primal. And so many songs that come out of that are shorthand for, ooh, this is a bad boy. Which, as near as I can guess, most of that TV show is just, ooh, look at this bad boy. So you've been conspicuously silent the whole time. Luckily, we do this on YouTube, so I know you haven't left. And you have occasionally made facial expressions in response to what I've said. But what are your feelings on my, I'm now realizing, weirdly intense and detailed theory?
You know, I think there's some merit to it. I find it.
Ooh, merit.
I find it highly unlikely.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Well, you have to understand. It's not like, you know, I don't hide the fact that I'm a Billy Joel fan. Therefore, I have quite a bit of experience with people responding to the fact that I'm a Billy Joel fan.
Okay.
And it's quite a bit of hostility.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I expect that a popular show being about what it's, what I think it's about, that there's probably a high probability, not a certainty, but a high probability that the music is used, you know, ironically, which means it could draw from anything. I mean, that they probably love to play like Piano Man over some really violent stuff going on, or, you know, things like that. I'm with you though. I suspect that they're not probably going into Nylon Curtain or Innocent Man or any of those. I mean, it's probably going to be older stuff, but drawing, they can probably, because that's the stuff that they like to make fun of the most. Piano Man, Just the Way You Are.
No, you're
just
right.
Just the Way You Are. Man, I can totally see them playing that over something really horrifically violent or something like that. Ironically.
Your argument makes total sense, and there's plenty of history to back it up. Weirdly, I think yours is the more pessimistic view of, which yeah, normally doesn't happen in our conversations like this.
Well,
as to my mind, I'm like, well, you know, only the good die young, Uptown Girl, You Might Think I'm Crazy. These are all songs that have been used 1,000 times to glorify the kind of characters that I think are in this show. And then William's like, yeah, but people also just pick a famous song and then do something totally stupid over the top of it. And I'm like, you're right. That is most of television. So now I'm like, okay, you might have a point.
Yeah, I don't.
The only reason you're witness to it in this case is because we're specifically talking about the Billy Joel oeuvre, so you're heightened awareness of it. That's pretty funny.
I mean, plus, if another thing that makes me go that direction is if let's say if a character likes Billy Joel and likes to have Billy Joel playing when he or she does things. Well, then Coffee already knows the reason why it's in the show. And she would probably ask more specifically, why do you think this character is a fan of Billy Joel or something of that nature? Mm. But obviously the music is being played to affect something. And she probably has an idea of what that effect is, but she wanted to know if we were watching what we thought of it. And we're not.
This is a good question. And it does say theoretically that if it was something too obvious, she'd already know, and she wouldn't need to ask. Bobby, you got to get in on this. Go to the blog. We're invested now. Apparently, I'm on team. Let's give mainstream TV creators the benefit of the doubt, which is not where I was planning to be on this or anything ever. But let's see how that goes. All right, I think we got time for another one. Let's do this. Let's see what happens. Hopefully that answers your question, Coffee. This one's from Dave of Id.
Well, I just saw today.
Harry likes to hang around your house.
I mean, I saw his eyes anyway. Didn't see his didn't see his lower face.
Did you ever see the original Hot Shots?
Nope.
It's my version of Airplane, I think, because of an age thing.
Oh.
And I do love, like, there's so many jokes that are referential that don't age well. And there's so many jokes that are incredibly problematic now. Things like that. And then we have a romantic moonlit walk where our hero, played by Charlie Sheen, says, "I've got my father's eyes. People have always said so." And then he pulls out a glasses case and opens it. And the girl says, "Oh, that's disgusting." And he's got a pair of eyeballs in the glasses case. Just, you know, just good old fashioned Borscht Belt level humor. It just still cracks me up.
Yep.
What are we podcasting?
What?
Oh, yeah. At Magical Talking.
Oh.
Dave Avid asks, favorite food on a stick? Porterhouse steak, medium rare.
I mean, you know, as an Iowan, I do appreciate a thing that's not usually a food, more specifically, that's not usually on a stick being put on a stick. I do appreciate that. But I have to say that there's never been a creation like that that made me think that they had improved on the corn dog. I mean, the corn dog is still king to me for some reason. I mean,
no, I hesitate to say that because I've had some really great things on sticks. And I've had some really terrible corn dogs.
Right.
Just, you know, Desert Island. Platonic ideal, food on a stick. It's a corn dog. I don't understand cosmology, but it was the first food on a stick. There's no question. However, the universe was created, the first food on a stick was the corn dog. This is something I find funny as I get older. So there is a distinction between food on a stick and deep fried that is not normally deep fried, and we like to sort of blend these together too often. I have now hit the point in my life where there are times where I'm like, you know what, I actually appreciate the convenience of this food being on a stick rather than the novelty.
Yeah.
Had this like deep fried sushi burrito thing on a stick, and it was delicious, and the stick was really well attached, and so you just, and I was like, I was so grateful for that stick. And I'm like, the stick's not improving the food, but I am old and do not want to deal with fine motor dexterity. Everything goes on my front now, just everything. Yeah, I can just lick it off when I get home, but I have to wait. I don't like that. So. Food's on stick. I mean, something to be said for just a skewer of meat on a stick. Some of our local Asian places, they've got ones where it's like, yeah, $2. We'll stick a couple of pieces of lamb on a skewer for you. I get those. Meat on a stick is good.
Sure it is.
You ever do fondue, like for reals?
Yes, sir. Even back when I ate meat, I did. A couple times.
How's your feeling about fondue?
I mean, I liked it. I pretty much liked everything about it, except it was sort of a frustrating way to eat. You know, little bits of it. I mean, if you're dipping something in just cheese or something, okay. But like if you're doing the kind where you're cooking a little piece of meat,
the oil.
Yeah.
Yeah, that part, because that's the thing. When I was little, fondue meant cheese fondue. Oh, I had that, and it was great. And then I got older, and the only real problem I had with cheese fondue is because I actually first had cheese fondue in Switzerland, and in Europe it had wine in it, and I was a kid, and I didn't really like. I love molten cheese, you know, of course. Then there was sort of this wine taste, and I didn't like that. But then I was older, and I'm of an age where people in my generation got fondue sets as a wedding gift, ironically.
Oh, ironically. Oh.
Yes, yes. No, I'm too young to have been given them legitimately.
Okay.
But I'm old enough that people of my, I don't know if we might have got them even. People of my age get them. And what that means is periodically you remember you got 3 fondue sets when you were married and they're in the cabinet and you're like, fuck it, I'm throwing a fondue party this weekend. And my sister-in-law did that one time, and a couple times actually. And so I had full fondue and we had cheese course and then we had the oil where you were cooking the meat in it. And then you had dessert course. And I always found dessert course a little bit, it felt like too much work. I'm like, pour chocolate over things I'm eating and I'll do it. Yeah, that meat course is terrible because you need a timer or something. like there should be a little fondue timer. Especially because, as we figured out, you want to put more than one in at a time.
Yeah, right.
You don't want to have to wait to cook and then literally one bite and then you have to wait for the next bite to cook. At least 2 at a time. Yeah, how do you know? They tell you how long roughly, but I'm like, oh.
My experience with fondue was the chocolate fondue was by far the most valuable to me personally. Like, you know, just having a whole bunch of stuff on your plate. Like maybe some marshmallow, maybe some strawberries, maybe this fruit or that fruit, maybe this, that other thing, and just taking it, dip it in the chocolate and eating it. And that, you know, just keep doing
molten
that.
Molten chocolate, molten cheese, you're never going to be bad.
Yeah, but I prefer the chocolate experience over the cheese experience, I think. But you're right, the cheese experience is pretty cool too, so I guess it's all right.
I mean, I think they're hitting the same spot.
I guess
it's not like one of them is a wholly original idea on the other. It's like, you know that thing you like that melts well? What about a lot of it?
Yeah, I guess. I guess that's right. I mean, one, you're going to probably use a lot of fruit and sweet. You might use vegetables or
I mean, traditional for the cheese is a bread.
Yeah,
bread. I've also seen vegetables, and then desserts, fruits, marshmallows.
Yeah.
I'm hungry. I haven't had supper yet. Maybe I'll hum.
Yeah, I mean, I never eat until after we do this, so.
I don't know what I'm doing tonight because this is the end here. Like, I got today, then I got tomorrow, and then I go pick up my wife. Then I'm back to normal life again. That's going to be weird.
Okay.
All right. Dave, give us your stick food ideas. All of you, give us your stick food ideas. But Coffee, get on that blog. Give us more boys Billy Joel gossip. We're going to work out a theory yet. You wait.
We're probably both wrong. She probably knows exactly why.
Both.
We're wrong.
No, I'm really hoping it's like cracked her brain open and she's like, of course, the whole show's just an allegory for Nicaragua.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.